Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, May 19th, 2017. And with me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I am post-pepcommed.
You had a busy day. You're post-pepcommed.
And, I filled in for you and pepcommed.
Yes, and thank you for covering for me yesterday. I got to spend some special time with family.
That's good.
Yeah, everyone should spend some special time with family. Yeah. John Martellaro, how are you?
I am good, but I'm in an apocalyptic snowstorm here in Denver.
Oh, what a coincidence. So am I. I'm actually quite pleased that I've had power all day.
Yeah. Lucky.
Yes.
Well, ours is underground, so that helps a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I know just what you guys are talking about. It's 68 degrees here.
Oh, you have no idea how desperately I want to keep the family-friendly rating on this show, and so I have to not say anything.
A-Basin's opening up some new trails. They got 24 inches of snow or something.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Our ski resorts are opening trails after they've actually closed for the season. Some of them are reopening.
And to be fair, it's probably going to be a hot day. This is actually kind of warm for here, so it's probably going to get in the upper 70s.
You just don't know when to stop, do you?
Or precisely, I know exactly when to carry on.
All right. Well, I'm going to change the subject because I'm still working on maintaining the family-friendly rating for our show. Mm-hmm. John, you think that we're going to have some issues learning to trust Siri. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I wouldn't call it issues. I just call it challenges. As a short recap, I wrote an article yesterday about how Siri gets smarter, we'll have to learn how to trust it. And what I'm referring to is what's called knowledge graphs. Right now, Siri gets a lot of data from Yahoo. Apple's trying to get away from that and develop its own data sources. But, you know, for example, you're interested in a sports score. And we know last night that the Ducks beat Nashville in overtime 3-2, and that's reported by the National Hockey League. And so if you ask Siri, what was the score of the Ducks-Nashville game last night, Siri will look it up. It's a fixed known value, and she'll say, you know, 3-2 in overtime, or he, depending on your choice. However, as Siri gets smarter and starts tapping into more sophisticated data sources in more sophisticated ways, Siri is going to have challenges digesting the data and assessing credences. You know, for example, if you were to ask Siri 5.0 in 2021, what's the president's policy on inheritance tax? Siri, for example, would have to access a lot of data sources, assess their credence, use artificial intelligence techniques to put together a sensible answer. And that's the same process that we do when we read the internet, is assessing sources, mashing it against our mental model, trying to assess the credibility of the source and coming up with something we can believe in. So the gist of the article was that as these data sources become less and less fixed and the data graphs become more complicated, human beings will be depending perhaps more on Siri's analysis. And as we know, people who are very experienced and intelligent have good sense about their own weaknesses, whereas people who are perhaps not as intelligent overestimate their own judgment, which has been shown in research. And so as any technology, as we come to become more dependent on it, we sort of lose our sense of self. And I referred to the process of fake news. I referred to the process of how intelligent agents may not always represent to us the full details of their reasoning. So if you, for example, ask Siri, what sources did you use or why do you believe this or that? You may not get a straight answer for one reason or another, because not because it's evil, but because the intelligent agent's perception of the universe its mental models, its reasoning processes are a little bit different than maybe the human process. And so, again, it'll be a challenge to learn how to trust and interrogate and have a good, trusted conversation with these agents. So that's the gist of the article.
So, John, I love the analysis, and I think that you did a great job of setting everything up and explaining it and defending it in your piece. And at the same time, I say this with love, I think you're flat out wrong.
Well, that's what we do here on TDO.
So here's why I think you're wrong, but I wish you weren't. I think that people are more than happy to blindly trust the information their technology gives them. And it's going to be a very, very easy transition for people as Siri gives them more and more information to just accept that at face value and assume that Siri's infallible. I mean, look at a simple Google search that people do or something that they see in a Facebook post and they just accept it as real and never question it. And I think with Siri speaking with an authoritative voice, people will be more than happy to just accept that and not question any of the information that they're given.
Well, I think what will happen is that experts will start having conversations with Siri as it evolves, and weaknesses in Siri's algorithms that will surface. And this is one of the reasons why Apple bought Lattice Data, is to get a better handle on estimating your own credibility. And I assume that Apple, in concert with the Lattice Data acquisition, will spend a lot of time validating and verifying the conclusions that Siri comes to. So, for example, just as a simple example, if you were to ask Siri who was elected president in 2009, was that the election year? 2008 was the election year. So if you were to ask Siri who was elected in 2008 and Siri came back and said George W. Bush, you might decide that you've got some flaws in your algorithm. So there's lots of this kind of testing that can be done to see how well the AI agent's responses and perceptions and models match the universe.
Here's why
there's a problem to be fixed. Go ahead, Ryan.
Here's why you're just wrong, though, because people like believe Alexa and she's dumb.
No, I'm talking about the developers doing the testing. The developers will spend a lot of time, Apple will spend a lot of time comparing the results of Siri's responses to their own educated responses. They may hire, you know, professors and psychologists and AI experts, and Siri will be run through the mill in terms of validation of its models to make sure that it's giving responsible answers. And if it starts giving irresponsible answers, they're going to take a look at the algorithms and figuring out why it puts so much credence on this source and not as much credence on that source.
Just isn't that the entire point of a neural net?
It could be. So even before it gets into the customer's hands, it's going to be validation tested. And so my concerns are not great on that end. The problem is that when the user's mental model doesn't match Siri's, what's going to happen? And how do you decide whether your reasoning is defective or your credence estimation is defective, or whether it's Siri? Or are you just going to, you know, give up and take what Siri tells you? Or are you going to say, no, Siri's always wrong? You know, it could get kind of like the political discussion where you fixate on ideas, and when somebody contradicts what you're saying, you see that as validation of what you believe, as opposed to new data that might adjust your credences. So that we'll have the same discussions with Siri in the future that we have with, you know, with political friends. And then how to decide who's right is going to be a very interesting process.
And yet, I think people are just going to blindly accept whatever Siri tells them.
It could be. And it's up to the manufacturer. It's up to Apple and Amazon, people who build these devices, to put a lot of time and energy into making sure that they give responsible answers. You know, I mentioned the partnership on AI, of which Apple is a member, and that organization works to develop the best practices for AI technologies. So, and there's going to be a lot of analysis and testing before people start going wrong. It's the same process with autonomous cars. It's like saying, well, you know, we're all going to die because software bugs will kill us in these autonomous cars. Well, you know, there's a certain level of testing where you put X amount of effort in to make sure that you have 7-9 reliability.
And yet there are people that have climbed into Teslas, let them go into self-driving mode, and just blindly trusted that that everything was going to be fine.
Yeah, but don't we have something like 25,000 people die every year from drunk driving accidents?
Oh, sure. And, but my point is that people will people have a propensity to just blindly trust their technology.
Yeah, trust them. You trust the machines, and you know the computer's not making a mistake. And even though we even when we know that that's not the case, I think many of us are the three of us here are fairly well educated in this whole computer business thing, and
pretty much.
I am sure that we have incorrectly trusted our the what our Macs were telling us or what some online service was telling us. I'm positive of that at some point.
Yes, I have examples I could share, including heated debates with my girlfriend over a piece of information that one of our iPhones provided, and one of us questions the validity of it, and the other one digs in their heels and says, no, this is absolutely right. And yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and it turns out I was wrong.
You just spoiled some fanfic. That's all I'm saying.
Or maybe I enhanced it. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that's possible.
Maybe. All right. So my assumption is that as Apple moves forward with their AI efforts and other companies do as well, we're going to be coming back to this topic, John. And I can't wait till we have the discussion where we decide which one of us is right. And even though I took a contrary position to what you're saying, I'm hoping that you are right and that we learn to be more critical of the data our devices give us.
I didn't see it as me versus you on this. I saw it as an evolving process of challenge.
It was totally me versus you.
Well, if you want to play that, but you know,
always such a consummate gentleman, and this is one of the reasons I love you, John. Seriously.
I think there'll be some people who will fall for some defects in Siri, but I don't think Apple is going to allow an advanced Siri to steer people astray that much. It's a question of safety, corporate responsibility, Apple's ethics. I think we'll be okay.
I hope so. And speaking of being okay and consummate gentlemen, Brian...
you just see, here's an example of someone being wrong. Go ahead.
So Brian, you found a thing about Tim Cook being spotted wearing one of the glucose blood sensor smart wristbands for their Apple Watch that we've talked about. Well, you and I talked about it on Apple Context Machine.
Yeah, we've talked about it a few times, and Apple has talked about this business a couple of times. Tim has said, he said, remember when he spoke at Glasgow University back in, I think, February?
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned it, too, when he was talking to the students back then, too. And we know that Apple has a team working on this, but what's new here is that someone saw and spilled the beans that Tim Cook was wearing one that was attached to his Apple Watch. And this is opposed to having one that's embedded with subcutaneous sensors in your belly,
mm-hmm.
which is the current state of the art, the current commercial state of the art. So, I mean, this is like if okay, so I have so many thoughts here. It seems like Apple is actually close to solving this problem, a problem that no one has solved before, which is non-invasive, persistent glucose monitoring, again, without having, you know, sensors stuck in your stomach.
Hence the non-invasive part.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's going to be astounding. And if Tim Cook is walking around testing this, it means Apple has got to be close. And by the way, one of the things that he talked about is that this was back at Glasgow University, was that using whatever he was saying he was testing at that point, which was probably related to this, right? But at the time, probably, he wasn't specifying that it was that. And he was saying that he had used that monitoring to make adjustments in his eating, his diet, to keep his glucose, his blood sugar levels more consistent. And the takeaway there is that if Apple is making this so easy to do that all of us can do it, this isn't just life changing for diabetics. This could be not life changing, but in, like, those who are interested in their health and who are interested in the way their body functions and the way their mind functions, and want to keep things on an even keel, you know, throughout the day. This could be very, very effective to them, in addition to being life changing to diabetics. This is big stuff.
This is big stuff. I'm very excited about this, and Brian, I'm curious, do you see this as a problem, Apple moving into the medical device market?
Well, no, it's not a problem. I mean, Apple has all the money. Apple can do whatever it wants. The only problem is whether or not Apple can focus on doing things like Apple Park and changing the world with glucose monitoring, and possibly changing the world with AR, or at least, you know, advancing AR significantly, and maybe being a major player in the autonomous vehicle market, and still iterate the Macs and iPads that we want.
Yeah, build those Macs.
I'm delighted to Apple. I mean, no one has solved this problem. Lots of money has been thrown at this problem, and now Apple is somehow solving it. No, Apple hasn't announced anything. Maybe it'll fall apart. Maybe it won't work. Maybe it won't get FDA approval.
Well, maybe Tim's doing accuracy testing, and maybe they'll discover that it isn't very accurate, and then back to the drawing board.
That could be the fact that it's Tim testing probably suggests that it's probably a little further along than that.
Yeah, I would assume so.
But I mean, I don't really don't have problems with Apple doing this. I am thrilled that Apple. I can't wait to get this. My health is I could be a lot healthier, and monitoring my glucose levels would probably be a really tremendously good thing for me, even though I'm not diabetic, at least not yet. And so I'm but above and beyond me, I'm just delighted to see Apple putting its money to work this way. But please keep iterating the Macs and iPads too.
What interests me, Brian, is we've seen Apple do this before. I can't come up with a good example, but in the back of my head, I've seen this thing where Apple comes out with a product and everybody go, oh, it's 1.0. It's no good. It doesn't work. It doesn't have this. It doesn't have that.
And we still buy the crap out of it.
And Apple, but it has the Apple aura, and people buy it. And then Apple has set a good foundation, a good technological software foundation, and it grows and it reaches this critical mass where it catches everybody by surprise. And everybody goes, oh, we never saw that coming. We never saw the potential for this platform coming. But Apple did.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we have seen that many, many times. Apple has had individual device flops. Mm-hmm. Cube, for instance.
Hockey puck mouse.
The hockey puck mouse.
How about the hi-fi?
And yes, the hi-fi. How about even to a lesser extent the iPhone 5C? But the platforms, to the excellent point John just made, have been home runs every time. Even the iPad, with declining sales year over year for the last few years, is still an incredibly successful product that most of the companies would give body parts to be able to have that business.
Mm-hmm. And and with this apparent push into the health market, I'm wondering what Apple is also looking at. I mean, the whole thing with the non-invasive blood glucose monitoring, I mean, that really is huge, a huge, huge thing. What else are they looking at where they can make a significant difference in the health market? And I don't know what that is, but I'm excited to find out.
Well, you and I, Jeff, we've talked about in-car navigation using virtual reality. I remember one time I was trying to navigate through a snowstorm, and all the signs, I was in a different city, and all the signs were covered in snow, sticky. And so if you had a virtual reality system that could project what those signs were really saying, you could do a lot better on your navigation. It's assuming you're working in concert with a, you know, turn-by-turn navigation system as well. So you and I have talked about imaginative ways to create a sense of virtual reality inside your car to both enhance the driving experience and to be safer.
Yep, and I love that Apple is looking at more than just technology as a tool to get us to buy products, and is looking at technology as something where they can profoundly impact the quality of our lives. I think that's pretty cool. Hey, we're out of time. Oh, Brian, did you need to say something?
Yeah. I need to say yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So I said it. Yeah.
We got the Brian yeah of approval. And with that, we are now out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having us, man. It's good to be here.
It's always awesome to get to chit-chat. And John, I'm so glad that you were here as well.
My pleasure. It was great.
Yes, absolutely. Listeners, I'm so glad that you joined us yet again. It's always great to have you in on the conversation. And we'll see everyone again on Monday.